A summer evening, not a breath of wind, and now laid out before the town, windows and glass doors open. Between the red darkness of the sunset and the twilight on the grounds, the lounge of the hotel. Inside, women with children talking about the evening. It happens so seldom, perhaps 3 or 4 times a year. And then not every year. We have to make the most of it while we can. Who knows if God will grant us others as fine before we die? Outside, on the terrace, are the men. They can be heard as clearly as the women in the lounge. They, too, are talking about the summers spent by the northern sea. The voices are all equally light and empty as they comment on the exceptionally lovely summer evening. Among those watching the scene in a lounge from the road behind the hotel is a man. He makes up his mind, crosses the road, and goes toward an open window. Just after he has crossed the road, no more than a few seconds, she, the woman in the story, enters the lounge. She has come in through the door opening onto the grounds. When the man reaches the window, she's already there, a few yards away among the other women. From where he's standing, the man couldn't see her face, even if he tried. She's looking at the door that leads to the beach. She's young. She's wearing white tennis shoes. You can see her long, lithe body, the whiteness of her skin, the sunny summer. Her black hair. You could only see her face in the shadow, even from a window opening onto the sea. She's in white shorts, with a black silk scarf tied carelessly around her waist. A dark blue hairband must hint at the color of her eyes, but her eyes are out of sight. Someone cries out inside the hotel. No one knows who. Whoever it is calls out a strange-sounding, disconcerting name made up of a long, wailing, oriental ah, quivering between 2 brittle and unrecognizable consonants, perhaps a T and an L. The voice is so clear and shrill that everyone stops talking and waits as if for an explanation, which is not forthcoming. Soon after the cry, a young foreigner comes in through the door the woman is watching now, the one leading to the upper floors of the hotel. A young foreigner with blue eyes, black hair. He goes over to the woman. Like her, he's young, he's tall. Like her, he's dressed in white. He stops. It was she whom he had lost. A light reflected from the terrace makes his eyes terrifyingly blue. When he comes up to her, you can see he's overjoyed at having found her and in despair at having to lose her again. He has the pale complexion of lovers, black hair. He is weeping. No one knows who called out the word or anything about it except that it seemed to come from the darker recesses of the hotel, the corridors, the bedrooms. Outside in the grounds, as soon as the young foreigner appeared, the man unconsciously drew nearer the window. His hands clutched at the sill as if stricken, lifeless, shattered by the strain of watching, the shock of seeing. The young woman beckons the young stranger toward the beach. She takes his hand. He barely hesitates. They both turn away from the window. The man is looking through and off, in the direction she indicated toward the setting sun. They go out through the door, leading onto the sea. The man remains by the open window, waiting. He stays there a long time, until everyone has gone and night has fallen. Then he leaves the grounds by way of the beach, staggering as if drunk, shouting and weeping like a character in a melodramatic film. He's smartly dressed, slim and tall. Even in the midst of his present calamity, there still survives a certain look, blurred by the artlessness of tears and the studied effect of clothes that are over-expensive, over-elegant. His solitary presence in the dusk of the grounds suddenly darkens the whole landscape and makes the voices of the women in the lounge dwindle away into utter silence. Late at night, after the beauty of the day has vanished as abruptly as in a reverse of fortune, they meet. When he goes into the cafe by the sea, she's already there with some other people. He doesn't recognize her. He could only have recognized her if she'd come into the cafe with the young foreigner with blue eyes and black hair. Without him, he doesn't know her. He sits down at a table. He's seen him before, even less he heard. She looks at him. It's inevitable. He's alone and attractive and worn out with being alone, as alone and attractive as anyone on the point of death. He is weeping. He's as unknown to her as if he had never been born. She leaves the people she's with. She comes over to the table of the man who has just come in and is crying. She sits down opposite and looks at him. He doesn't see her at all, doesn't see her hands lying motionless on the table, nor her drawn smile, nor that she's shivering, that she's cold. She has never seen him before in the streets of the town. She asks, "What's wrong?" He says, "Nothing's wrong. Nothing." Tells her not to worry. The soft voice that suddenly breaks your heart. He can't stop crying. She says, "I'd like to help you stop crying." She weeps too. He doesn't really want anything. He doesn't hear what she's saying. She asks if he wishes he were dead, if that's what is wrong, because she might be able to help. She wants him to go on talking. He says, "No, it's nothing. Take no notice." She can't help it. She talks to him. "Perhaps you're here to avoid going home." "Yes. You live alone." "Yes." He tries to think of something to say, asks her where she lives. She's staying in a hotel on one of the streets leading down to the beach. He doesn't hear. He wasn't listening. He stops crying, says he's suffering because he's lost track of someone he wanted to see again. He often suffers from this sort of thing, this sort of grief, he says. "Stay with me," he says. She stays. He seems rather put out by the silence, feeling he has to say something. He asks her if she likes opera. She says she doesn't like opera much. She does like Kala very much. How could one not? She speaks slowly, as if she has lost her memory. She says she can't remember, but there's Verdi too. And Monteverdi. You must have noticed. They're the ones people like when they don't like opera much. When they don't like anything anymore, she adds. He has heard. He's going to cry again. His lips quiver. The names of Verdi and Monteverdi make them both cry. She says she hangs around in cafes too, and the evenings are long and hot like this, and the whole town is out of doors. You can't just stay in your room. Is she lonely too then? Yes. He weeps. Don't stop. He's really crying. He doesn't talk about anything anymore. Neither of them talks anymore. They sit still till the cafe closes. He sits facing the sea, and she's on the other side of the table facing him. For a couple of hours, she looks at him without seeing him. From time to time, they remember and smile at one another through their tears. And they forget again. He asks her if she's a prostitute. She isn't surprised, and she doesn't laugh either. She says, in a way, but I don't take money. He also thought she worked in a cafe. No, she doesn't. She toys with a key to avoid looking at him. She says, I'm an actress. You must know me. He doesn't apologize for not knowing her. He doesn't say anything. He stopped believing in anything anyone says. He must think she realizes this. The cafe closed. They were outside again. He looked at the sky where it meets the sea. On the horizon, there were still traces of the sunset. He spoke of the summer, of the unusually fine evening. She seemed not to know what he was talking about. She said, they close because we're crying. She takes him to a bar further inland on a main highway, and there they stay till daybreak. It's there he tells her he's in trouble. She says, your last hour has come. She doesn't smile. He says, yes, that's it. That's what he thought, and that's what he thinks still. He smiles a forced smile. He says again that he's been looking for someone in the town whom he wanted to see again. That's why he was crying. Someone he had never met, whom he saw by chance that same evening, and who was the one he'd always been waiting for, and whom he wants to see again at all costs, even that of his life. That's the sort of person he is. She says, what a coincidence, then. That's why I spoke to you, I think, because of the despair. She smiles, embarrassed at using the word. He doesn't understand, and for the first time, he looks at her. He says, you're crying. He looks more closely. Your skin is so white, he says. You look as if you've only just arrived on the coast. She says, her skin is the kind that doesn't take the sun. She was going to say something else, but leaves it unsaid. He gazes at her intensely, almost not seeing her in order to remember better. Strange, he says. I feel as if I've met you before. She ponders, gazing back at him, trying to think of where and when it might have been. Then she says, no, I've never seen you till tonight. He comes back to her white skin. It might be an excuse for asking why she was crying. But no, he says, they're always frightening, eyes as blue as yours. But perhaps it's because your hair is so black. She must be used to people talking about her eyes, she answers. Blue eyes look different according to whether you're dark or fair. It's as if the color of the eyes depended on the hair. With black hair, they look indigo blue, perhaps rather dramatic, as you say. With fair hair, they're more brown or gray and not frightening. What she says now is probably what she didn't say a little while back. I knew someone with blue eyes that seemed to have no center or source. It was as if the whole of the blue were looking at you. He suddenly sees her, sees that she's describing her own eyes. All of a sudden, she burst out crying, rushing, wrenching sobs beyond her strength. Then she says, I'm sorry. I feel as if I'd committed a murder. I wish I were dead. He's afraid she too is going to leave him, to disappear into the town. But no, she goes on weeping beside him, the tears blurring her unfeigning eyes, eyes that leave her naked. He takes her hands and puts them to his face. He asks if it's the blue eyes that are making her cry. She says yes. It so happens that's it. You might put it like that. She doesn't take her hands away. He asks when it was. Today. He kisses her hands as he might her face, her lips. He says she smells light and sweet, like smoke. She gives him her lips to kiss, tells him he's embracing the other, the stranger. She says, you're kissing his naked body, his lips, his skin, all over his eyes. Until day dawns, they mourn the mortal grief of the summer night. She seems to be sleeping. That's what she looks as if she's doing, sleeping. She's in the middle of the empty room and the white sheets spread out on the floor. He is sitting beside her. He looks at her from time to time. There aren't any chairs in the room. He must have brought the sheets here, and one by one, door after door, shut up the other rooms and the house. This room overlooks the sea and the beach. There is no garden. He has kept the yellow ceiling light. He probably doesn't know why he made all these arrangements with the sheets and the doors and the light. She is sleeping. He doesn't know her. He watches her sleep, her open palms, her still unknown face, her breasts, her beauty, her closed eyes. If he had left the doors of the other rooms open, she probably would have gone to look at them. That's what she must have thought. He looks at her legs in repose, smooth as her arms and breasts. Her breathing's the same, smooth and long. Under the skin of her temples, quietly the beat of the moving blood slowed down by sleep. Apart from the yellow ceiling light falling from the middle of the ceiling, the room is dark, round, seemingly sealing in the body completely. She is a woman. She's sleeping. Or seems to be. You can't tell. She seems to be wholly caught up in sleep. Eyes, hands, and mind. Her body isn't absolutely straight. It tilts to the side a little, towards the man. Its curves are smooth. Their shifting's imperceptible. The words that come to the tip of one's tongue, complete dislocation beneath the skin. Her mouth is slightly open, the lips of bare makeup chapped by the wind. She must have walked here, and the weather has already turned cold. The fact that the body is sleeping doesn't mean it is lifeless. On the contrary, it even knows when someone is looking at it. The man has only to enter the area of light for it to give a sudden start, and for the eyes to open and stare uneasily till they recognize him. It was on the highway at sunrise, after the second cafe had closed, that he said he was looking for a young woman to sleep with him for a while, because he was afraid of going out of his mind. He wanted to pay her. He thought women ought to be paid for keeping men from dying or going out of their minds. He had wept again, exhausted as he was. The summer frightened him. Their loneliness in the summer, when seaside resorts were full of couples and of women and children, when people were made fun of them everywhere, at variety shows, in the casinos, in the streets. In the terrible light of day, she sees him for the first time.